Welcome to the Dairobi Health Show. Before we get started, there's some resources available to you that I want to share. First of all, make sure and go to Dairobi.com and check the resources page. There you'll find our free Nutrition and Fitness for Busy Professionals mini course, which is highly recommended, absolutely free, as well as the current year's Dirty Dozen printable PDF sheet, which shows you those dozen foods you really ought to buy organic, along with the Clean 15, those 15 foods that you're probably wasting your money on if you buy them organic. In addition, you will find the Dairobi Undiet PDF. And that is designed to give you 7 very simple to follow strategies of health, nutrition, and fitness. Basically, the Dairobi Undiet is designed for people who just want to look like a statue of a Greek god or goddess and do it in a very simple way. And one last thing, if you see something on Dairobi.com that you like, make sure and use the coupon code INSIDER to save 15%. So at checkout, enter the code INSIDER, INSIDER, and get 15% off anything your heart desires. And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Dairobi Health Show. I am excited today to have the author of the book Sugar Crush, Dr. Jacobi, on the line with me today. It's taken a while for us to get this interview together and coordinate our schedules. And finally, here we are. Thank you, Dr. Jacobi, for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we'll be diving into some of these principles of Sugar Crush. But of course, you're a doctor who has many years of clinical experience, and this is something that evolved in your life over time. And so before we jump into the details of the book and what you've discovered, I'd really be interested to hear the backstory of how this came to be.
Well, it goes way back, which is when I look back on, I don't even know how I got involved in this, in a sense. But this is 1981, and I was at the hospital doing surgery, and I had quite a few patents on surgical procedures, instruments, and devices. And one of the nurses at my hospital was from Taiwan, and she said, this device that you use, the doctor she worked with back in Taiwan, Taipei, wanted to know how to get the device. That's how it all started. His name was Dr. Luke Chu. He was the Surgeon General of Taiwan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he was also interested in diabetes. And he asked me if I would go to Taipei, the capital of Taiwan, to look at his country and see why they had diabetes. That's how
it started. Okay, interesting. And how did you become an expert in diabetes? What was your undergraduate degree? And tell us a little bit about your academic experience and then how your career got you into the field of diabetes research.
Well, in the 70s, there was this war called the Vietnam War, truth be told.
Right. Yeah.
And I was getting out of college and not really knowing what I wanted to do. And a friend of mine who was a podiatrist, or his father was, and I met him in the summer, and we were talking, and I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm going to podiatry school. I said, oh, that's right. Your dad was a podiatrist. And I said, that's interesting. And he said, why don't you look into it? I did. So it was the summer before, and I didn't want to get drafted, the truth.
Don't blame me for and that.
I looked at getting into something serious. So I went to University of Pennsylvania and Villanova to look at what they had, and I went to Villanova for chemistry in my bridge between graduating college and getting into podiatry school in Philadelphia. That's how it started. I really didn't know anything about it. But I got the bug on chemistry, and when I was at school in Philadelphia, in those days, we had these things called work-study programs. I don't know if you remember that. You actually worked and got paid 85 cents an hour or whatever it was.
Nice.
Yeah, and I got assigned to Dr. Michael Sheff's clinic in Philadelphia at the Ben Franklin Clinic. And he was working on fetal ketouria, which is a genetic disease of birth. And his clinic is world famous. He came from London, his PhD, MD, and he worked with Watson and Crick and DNA, their laboratory assistant, and I became his. And he's talking to me about DNA. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, but then I was in his class in biochemistry. So that kind of gave me the bug at what this stuff is all about. I'm feeding rats different chows, some with sugar, some without. Does it have an effect on PKU, that diabetic or that phenylketonuria, which is a phenylalanine defect of the amino acid? Complicated subject, but we did figure it out. Or I didn't figure it out. I just fed the rats.
You were there. You were there in the experiment.
And I listened to his, he lectured to me every day. So it was kind of a one-on-one with a Nobel laureate.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds interesting. Yeah. So after that, I came to finish my schooling. Then I did my residency in Philadelphia. And then I moved out to Phoenix and Scottsdale area. And that stayed with me, that idea. I then subsequently started the wound care center for our local hospital, Scottsdale Memorial, at that time, about 35 years ago. And now it's a 6-hospital conglomerate. And during that time, Dr. Dellen from Johns Hopkins was giving a lecture and a novel new way to treat diabetic neuropathy. And he said that he had developed a cure. I shouldn't use the word cure, a process by decompressing nerves for the lower extremity. And I was like, gee, that sounds terrific. And he said to me, and I remember the sentence, he said, why do you podiatrists cut the nerve out in the foot? I said, well, that's what we were trained to do. He said, come down to Johns Hopkins. I'm going to train you, which he did about 20 years ago. I read his textbooks. He's written 75 chapters, 700 articles, 2 beautifully written textbooks on neurosurgery of the lower extremity. And I got so interested in it. He taught me. I came back to Scottsdale. I did his surgeries, done thousands of those surgeries. We don't have any amputations. I shouldn't say any, but a minimal.
Thousands. I mean, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that was 20 years ago. And over the time...
Well, hold on. I've got hung up on this now. Just real quick. How many, that's a few a week, right? Like, how many surgeries do you typically do in the, say, the course of a month? Or did you at that time?
Yeah, in those days, I was younger. I would do 15 surgeries a week, something like
that. Wow. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. So they were all centered around the diabetic patient. They were abscesses. Mm-hmm. Osteomyelitis, amputations, things of that nature. And I still did corrective surgery as well, a Charcot foot, putting frames on, all that kind of stuff. But he taught me a new way of thinking and seeing. And he's a brilliant guy. His name is Lee Dellen, and he is professor of neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. Arguably, I always say, smartest guy I ever met. And so we became friends. I don't know why I get so interested in it, but a not interesting thing, the segue between nutrition and surgery, diabetic neuropathy is, it is nutrition. It's sugar. It never was anything else. It's almost ridiculous when you think about it. Human beings do not eat sugar in a natural state. They don't. They eat fat. That's what makes them healthy. But 10,000 years ago, the king said, climb up that pole and get me that honey. He was fat, skinny, and that's when diseases started.
Interesting. Now, before you get into that, the word diabetes, let's just make this really simple for everyone. Now, I understand there's type 2 and type 1 diabetes, but I really couldn't tell you what diabetes is or what it really does. Could you start with those basics, first of all, you started with diabetes now, but of course, from there, from understanding diabetes as you came to do, you then developed these ideas that don't just apply to diabetics, but let's start with the diabetes. What is it? And what was the discovery there? And then let's move to the application for people who don't have diabetes.
Okay. That's a good question. And there was an evolution of thinking. Now, I'm traditionally trained in the current concepts of diabetes, heart disease, all that stuff. It's cholesterol, plaque, take your statin drugs, and you'll be better. There could be nothing further from the truth than that sentence. But that is the paradigm that is taught in medical schools this day as we speak. But it gradually evolved in my mind. Let's use the word diabetes. Diabetes means to siphon water out. That's what it means. It's a Greek word. because diabetics hundreds of years ago urinated frequently. So the bees would come around the urine because there was sugar in it. Physicians in those days, and it's a good thing we don't have to do this, they would taste the urine. If it was sweet, they said you had diabetes. That's where the word. So they used some medicines, natural herbs, to a French lilac, which is now metformin, to reduce the levels of sugar. So, but let's go back to why this sugar was in our diet in the first place.
Okay.
The United States of America is based on sugar. Columbus came here to look for those spices, one of which was sugar, on his first voyage. Then he came back with the second voyage, by the way. It was 1,000 men and 17 ships. And a year later, which is amazing to me.
I read his journals.
It's just shocking. I mean, we can talk all day long about Columbus.
Yeah, right. I mean, just reading his journal, my father-in-law, after he passed away and everyone was going through his belongings, and there was some stuff that people could just kind of pick out. And there's this very large, hardbound book of Columbus's journals. And I read them and it was just absolutely fascinating.
It is. He got those maps from the Portuguese. He went to Queen Isabella and Abraham of Spain, which was just the colony at that time. And I think he went five times to petition them to raise the money to go find this bounty.
He did. He had to go to the Spanish to get the money.
Yeah. And they leased the ships. And you know the rest of the story. But anyway.
Yeah. But the part that's interesting is about the sugar. I did not know that. And if I knew it, I forgot it. But we always think gold, right? We always tend to think, oh, they came over here to get the gold. But actually what you're saying about the sugar, and basically it was all the resources, any and all resources they could get and bring back to Europe. That was what it was all about.
Right. And Columbus brought wheat to the Americas as well. And he brought cattle, Corrientes cattle, the roping cattle.
Yeah.
And they got places that are all over the country.
Right.
Well, he did all those things, but it's really basically sugar. Sugar plantations built the wealth of this country and is now destroying this country when you think about it. So diabetes mellitus, to siphon out water, mellitus meaning sweet water. That's what it means, Greek. So that word, I'm in Taiwan in 1981, I say to Dr. Chu, what's your Mandarin word for diabetes? And he says, diabetes. I said, well, what's your Mandarin word? And we don't have one. No,
because you
didn't have the disease.
Wow.
You gotta name something that exists.
Wow.
Now, so that was interesting. So
yes,
I spent 3 years there on and off. And then I went doing the research. And he said, what's the answer? And I said, it's the food. It's changed in the diet. And I was in an 11-story building. And there were a lot of scientists there. And they're excellent scientists, by the way. And I took them over to the corner. We looked out the window. I said, there's a fast food restaurant. 1979, the first fast food restaurant was built in Taipei. And they already had an epidemic. They're skinny people that eat a natural diet. When you get sugar, you get fat. It's that simple. And you can see the people coming out of this fast food restaurant. They were already fat in 2 years. Okay, I said, that's your problem. And he goes, he didn't believe me, by the way. I didn't know what was in the food. And this is an interesting study was just done. They took the receipts of fast food restaurants in 37 countries for the last 20 years. I'll summarize it quickly. Potato chips, French fries, burger, cheese, sodas, etc. And they did a Cox regressive analysis, which means like handicapping, which one is the most important to become a diabetic? It's the soda. It's not the hamburger.
Interesting.
The bread is a factor, but the soda, far and away, that's your epidemic right there. That's a very good point. So it is the diet. What in the diet is the problem? Then we break that down. Which sugar? What are the fats? And what we can get into that detail. But if you're going to handicap it, it's high fructose corn syrup.
So in that whole progression, basically from the 70s through the early 2000s of what you just covered, at some point, it sounds like you started telling people to stop eating sugar. So look, you got to stop eating sugar or you're going to have persistent and chronic problems. When did that epiphany come to you? And when did you start prescribe? I say prescribe, not really the right word, but advise, I guess, when you're telling someone not to take something. How did that happen and how did that work out?
Well, it's interesting because there were parallel thought processes going through my mind at the time. So let's go, I'm at the wound care center. This is 35 years ago. And I'm doing those surgeries, the basic surgeries that we're talking about. Then I run into Dellen. And just prior to that, maybe 5 years running into Dr. Dellen, I had my gallbladder out. So that was probably, say, 25 years ago. And my mother had her gallbladder out. And I thought that was just a hereditary process. And those days, I went to the gym every day. I was probably 30 pounds heavier then than I am now. And I lifted weights every day. I did surgery in the morning. I ate the hospital lunch, which is nothing but carbs. I went to the gym. And that's what I did. But the weight was inching up and up and up.
Yeah.
And I had this sharp pain in my side. It was a gallbladder attack. I had my gallbladder out. And I was in the lunchroom at the hospital. And my family doctor friend, who is a portly fellow, is way overweight. And he said, "What happened to you?" And I said, "I had my gallbladder out." He said, "Well, you don't exercise your gallbladder enough," facetiously. He's kidding me. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, gallbladder is a muscle. You don't empty it. You need to eat all day long." And it's funny. I thought, well, maybe you're because I never ate breakfast. I'd have coffee, cream and sugar, a bagel, whatever was around.
Yeah.
And do surgery in the morning until about 1 o'clock, have a big lunch, see patients, go to the gym. That was my day.
Huh.
He said that to me. It stuck in back of my mind. I run into Dr. Dellen. He says, diabetic polyneuropathy, the nerves in the leg are caused by the biochemical reaction of sugar on nerves. Now, his training was different than mine. He started out as a plastic surgeon, as a hand surgeon. So a patient of his in the 80s, she had carpal tunnel. He fixed that ulnar tunnel at the elbow. He fixed that. She was diabetic. And she said to him, "Why don't you fix my legs?" And he said, "Well, that's a different disease." But brilliant guy. So he thought, "Oh, okay, let's see if that's true or not." Went to the laboratory, and he has the resources at Johns Hopkins and National Institute of Health. He did a fabulous investigation on this.
The National Institutes of Health is at Johns Hopkins?
No, he worked there and at Johns
Hopkins. Okay.
And Curtis Hanson.
Yeah.
Big institutions. He had the resources, lots of scientists to help him, but it is his ideas. That's a whole other show. So he theorized that diabetes caused the chemical reaction of the nerve. So the polyol pathway, I'll try to make it simple, which means sugar gets inside the nerve, pulls water into the nerve, and swells it, number one. Number two, the Maillard reaction, which is sugar plus a protein, the covering around the nerve, shrinks. And he concluded that neuropathy is a compression neuropathy. Neurologists don't believe that. Neurologists are wrong. It's absolutely true. But neurologists are not surgeons. So even if it was compression, what are they going to do about it? Take Lyrica, gabapentin, all the rest of the stuff. It doesn't fix anything. So that's the fundamental divide in medicine right there. So he kept writing the papers, and he's relentless. I mean, 700 articles, 75 chapters, 2 textbooks, a lot of work.
Wow.
So we became friends. I'm thinking in the back of my mind about this gallbladder, and he's teaching me, and I'm saying, wait a minute, gallbladder, muscle, nerve, muscle, contraction, cholesterol, stone, block the duct. What do you eat when you have cholecystitis, gallbladder disease? Don't eat fat. If you don't eat fat, what are you going to eat? Sugar. Absolutely the wrong diet. That's what I was doing. So kind of complicated. But so I said to Dr. Dellen one day, which was a mistake, I said, "I think there's more to your theory than what's known. And he said, why don't you figure it out? Not nicely, by the way. I mean, he's a...
I'm done with this. Okay. Here's the baton, you go.
You figure it out. I said, okay. Yeah. And I got that idea in my mind. And I like to read, so I read, I hate to say it, thousands of articles and so many books. Columbus, I read 3 books just on that because I was so intrigued by that. So then I found this guy, and his funny name, his name is Peter Dick. He's a neurologist. He's from Canada. He's the world's leading authority on diabetic polyneuropathy. Has a great textbook. I read it. It's very boring, but very well done. And in the book, it says 50% of people who have their gallbladder out will go on to have diabetes.
Wow.
That's me. And I'm going, what? He doesn't explain it, but now my gallbladder's out. He's a neurologist. He says that. I'm in the clinic at the hospital. Hi, Mrs. Jones, what can I do for you? You got pus coming out the bottom of your foot. You got osteomyelitis. You're going to have an amputation. Let's go through your history. Oh, you had your gallbladder out 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
You had a heart attack. And I'm thinking, is this me 25 years later? Now I'm really interested.
Yeah.
More than interested.
Right.
And then I speed up my reading. I find John Cook. He's a cardiologist at Stanford. I text him. I say, hey, he wrote an article called The Uber Marker in 2004. And I read it and I said, oh, this has something to do with Dr. Dellen's theory. Text him. He calls me on the phone. Love your idea. Come up to Stanford. I work with him. And that's the rest of the story in the book, which is amazing, I think, how I put those dots together. Because it was just, you could say, stepping stones. Just one little dot to the next.
How much time did you spend at Stanford finishing that research?
I worked with John. Let's see. That was probably 2006, something like that, on and off. So what I did was I took my patients who had diabetic neuropathy, compression neuropathy, tested them with his molecule, which is called asymmetric dimethyl arginine. What does that mean? That word means that this substance is elevated in the body. And I was theorizing that it was the first molecule that interrupted the autonomic nervous system, because the other two pathways were sensory and motor. But the literature back in 2005 said, no, these are two separate diseases, small fiber disease and large fiber. Mm-hmm. I said, no, they're the same disease. Mm-hmm. They're a continuum of biochemical changes of the nerve. So we did that. And I took that data to Dr. Cook, and he said, well, quit your practice, work with me full time. Well, my kids were like 10. And I said, no, I'll write a book because it's going to take 15 years to figure all this stuff out. No one's going to read it, even though I do like rats. And they are amazing animals, by the way. They do a service, and they're just amazing. I won't say people. So I said, I could do that. But let real scientists figure it out. I'll write a book. That's what Sugar Crush is about. So what is my hypothesis? My hypothesis is that sugar causes nerve compression. The ADMA, the asymmetric dimethyl arginine, blocks the nitric oxide pathway, which blocks the blood supply to the nerve. Not just this nerve, not that nerve, but every nerve in your body. And they cause inflammation. And the end organ doesn't function. So over back to Columbus, that's in the 1400s, then sugar's pouring into England. Thomas Willis, father of neurology in the 1600s, by the way, he's got a patient. He's treating these patients who had diabetes in those days. They're super wealthy. They were like cocaine parties. They just ate sugar all day long. They were getting migraine headaches. They were getting muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis. So they started putting these labels on these particular inflammatory itises. It's sugar. It inflames the nerve. This one, this one, this one, every nerve. That's my thesis. Am I right? Yes. Has it been proven conclusively? No. Because Big Pharma wants a drug for every itis. Now we have COVID-19. Is it part of my theory? Absolutely. You can't have viruses unless you, that's how you grow them. That's what's called a petri dish. You
gotta put
Other organisms die.
Let's do a little bit of Q&A and let me just draw out some things here. So I have a banana every day. I like to have a nutritional blood panel every year, just see if I'm deficient in anything. And last time I had one, they said I was low on potassium. So all my trace minerals are good, which is fine, but I was low on potassium. So I've added a banana every day. Now, a banana, of course, is sugar. It's natural, but it's still sugar. And so this is my first question to you is, an orange is sugar, an apple is sugar, although it's lower on the glycemic index, and so on. And all carbs are sooner or later converted into sugar.
Correct.
So we tend to assume, in most cases correctly, that a banana is healthier than half a cup of high fructose corn syrup. but talk to us about that for a minute. What's the difference in the body between the banana and the high fructose corn syrup?
Huge difference. So the banana, let's go back in the jungle with the banana. What you're eating is not a banana. That's a hybrid banana that's been
fair point.
Very high sugar content. That's why you like them.
Right.
In a grocery store, the biggest selling fruits are in the front. Grapes, bananas, anything sweet. Let's take orange juice. I think that's probably even a better potassium source. Because the hippocampus, with the organism in your brain, which is the addiction center, that's the guy who says to you, oh, eat that banana, eat that orange juice to get the potassium. But you're really saying, I love that guy.
Give me sugar.
Give me sugar. He directs what you're eating. I even take it to the microbiome. They're the guys that are really telling you what to do. Those guys, there's 10 cells to every one of you. So they send a message up the vagus nerve to the hippocampus and said, tell this guy to eat sugar. Well, he's not going to do it. Well, tell him to eat orange juice or maybe a banana. That's why you have that message. They're telling you what to eat, the lactobacillus and all these guys. Yeah, that's what's happening. So that's where the addiction center is. That's why you can't, it's so overwhelming.
Okay, so let's get now to practical terms. And so in other words, can I just summarize you correctly that even a banana is causing the same problems as refined sugar?
Correct.
Okay. So let's cut to the brass tacks now then. I want to give listeners actionable takeaway items.
Yeah.
Well, first let's strip their hope. Let's strip their hope and tell them what they got to cut out. And then let's give them hope with what they do to have still an enjoyable life after we strip the hope. So to strip the hope, let's talk about, can they have any sugar? Can they have any carbs? What exactly do you prescribe to a person to eat on a daily basis?
Well, there's two answers in my book, one by a nutritionist, one by me. Okay. I say, if it tastes good, don't eat it unless you read the label, because I guarantee you it has sugar. I just saw a patient 2 minutes ago. He's got a Starbucks drink there. He's got severe diabetic neuropathy, painful, okay? I said, and then he starts to apologize, try to hide it, actually. They always do.
Yeah.
I said, let's look at the label. Starbucks coffee. Oh, they're delicious. Mr. Schultz, Mr. Sharon Kerr, he ran for president, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's ruining America with his sugar addiction product. And I'll say that right to his face. Coffee is cheap, is expensive, and you make no money on it.
Right.
You had 10 cents worth of sugar and you got a $7 drink. These people are addicted to it.
Yeah.
So the addiction is real. And there's no question about it. So that addiction center, which is the hippocampus. So you have the neural network, which is the olfactory nerve, and you start to lose your sense of smell and taste. So you need more and more sugar. And then that's telling you, give me more and more sugar. And that's the addiction center. And by the way, it's the long-term memory center. Those three neural networks. That's Alzheimer's. We're going to have 1 in 2 adults in the next 10 years that have Alzheimer's, which is, in my opinion, swelling of the nerve leading to the brain. It's that structure.
Okay, now you talked about reading ingredient labels, but I'm even still talking about whole foods. I love foods that I don't have to read any label at all. For example, let me give you another one. So today for lunch, I had chicken, basmati rice, not too much, maybe half a cup of the rice, and roasted vegetables. Now, in the roasted vegetables, this one I had made with yams, mushrooms, Brussels sprouts, and onion. So in that case, those are whole foods. Yet that yam is also a sugar. But am I okay? And so is the rice going to turn into sugar, right? It's a carb.
Yeah, probably more carbs than I would want to eat.
Okay.
I would probably do a sweet potato, which is really not a potato. It has a lot more fiber.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's divide it. Ketogenic diet versus a Mediterranean diet versus the American diet. Probably most people are going to do the Mediterranean diet because it's a little bit more tolerable and flavorful than a keto. So ketogenic for your audience, that means fat-based diet. That's what it means. Very little meat.
Yeah.
A lot of fat. And why does it work? Because you're not hungry. You're really not hungry. I'm pretty much keto.
Okay.
But I still eat carbs. Otherwise, I'd probably go down to 100 pounds. I mean, you really get skinny on a keto diet.
Do you get 20 to 50 grams of carbs a day? Or what would you guess?
A lot of days I don't eat because I'm not hungry. Purposely. Okay. What helped me lose weight, and it was instant, was putting butter in my coffee. That was my number one. It just cut the appetite. The craving for sugar was gone. Now, if I do have carbs, I do like the sweet potato. I like sweet potato fries because you can get that. I still eat hamburgers. I still eat them with the bun because it's more convenient. But if I can, I won't have the bun. Bacon and eggs. So I'm pretty far over there on the keto side. But the Mediterranean diet, which is kind of what you did or are doing, is probably what most people can do. But if you have a weight problem, you need to be on keto till you get the weight off and then add carbs back in. That's what I would say.
Basically, you're an advocate for, well, essentially, I don't necessarily hear that you're a keto crusader, if we could use that term, but that you are a high-fat, low-carb, moderate protein, I would assume.
Yeah, there's three studies that I looked at that I thought were seminal. The Maasai warriors in Africa, they're tall, they're warriors. And their diet is they eat blood. They drink the blood of their goats.
Oh.
And they feed the meat to their dogs. They don't even eat the meat. And they're extremely healthy and very fit.
Now, that's not the carnivore diet even. That's what the bloodivore diet. I don't know what we call that.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. They don't eat the meat. They eat dairy. They eat the dairy and blood. That's what they do. Now, there was a study in Canada, and these trappers were in Canada, and the winter came in, and they were isolated for the whole winter. They came to find them. They were all dead, and they didn't know why. But they had kidneys shut down because they were only eating rabbits. Rabbits is meat. Rabbits have no fat. So they ate meat.
Yeah, yeah.
Kidney shut down. That's a carnivore diet, so I'd be careful with that. But if you just eat fat, you live forever. I mean, it's a keto diet.
Yeah, so the focus is fat, not protein.
Right. Eskimos, in their natural habitat on an iceberg, there's no vegetables there. They eat blubber, fat, period. Kind of boring.
What was your last meal? Your last full meal, what was that made of?
Well, I haven't eaten today, so I have to go back.
Yeah, go back to yesterday or whenever you had a full meal.
This is embarrassing. I had bacon and eggs.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Okay.
I had 2 cups of coffee today. That's it.
With butter?
With butter.
With butter. Okay. So, Sugar Crush, you wrote the book. By the way, it's highly reviewed on Amazon. I was having a look at it today, and there's like 500 almost perfect 5-star reviews, which is a lot. I'm an Amazon seller. I understand how the whole thing works. So, it's a popular book.
It is popular. I mean, it came out in 2015. It was the number one science book of the year.
Oh, wow.
I didn't really promote it because I have a practice, and you know, they wanted me to go on the book tour, which is kind of fun, but I couldn't leave my practice. So and we didn't have Zoom like that even 6 years ago, it being popular. Yeah. This is much more effective, and I like the question answer. It gets out what I want to say. And in the book, I really, if I was writing it over, it would be a lot better, I think, because with time you can correct your mistakes.
Sure.
I originally called the book The Nerve of It. That was the name of the book. Because I was saying the nerve of the U.S. government, the USDA, forming that food pyramid, which is an absolute lie.
Yeah.
To eat 6 to 11 helpings of carbohydrate at the base and very little fat at the top. That's why we have the pandemic today. My big issue today is the COVID-19, and it's sugar. I just looked at the statistics last week. 94% of all the patients in our hospital here, big hospital chain, 94% have diabetes and cardiovascular disease who get in an intensive care unit with COVID-19.
Yeah.
So why is that? Because viruses, I like to say viruses are people too.
Yeah.
That's their job, to find a host so they can take their RNA to get into your DNA so they can replicate themselves, because they can't do it themselves. They need a host. And they will find a host who is inflamed with sugar. They will live and you will die. That's the fact. And vaccinating yourself is ridiculous. That's just saying, eat all the sugar you want and we'll vaccinate you. I was doing a metaphor, and politically, people won't like this, but I don't care. So think of this herd immunity nonsense, right? So you got a herd. Americans are basically old, fat, and sick. Would you agree with that?
Too true. Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that,
The older population are pre-diabetics or diabetic. It's a high number. It's a very sick herd.
Wow.
Usually we think of the lion sitting there watching that herd goodbye. But I'm going to use a politically sensitive word, a tiger representing China. They're looking at it. You're looking at the herd. And here's where the shocker is. So if you can just picture that herd heading for the abyss, led by a senile wildebeest. This country is in trouble. Now, that's not going to make me any friends. And they'll probably take you off the air.
I told you at the beginning, I want you to be you and speak your truth. And I it's fine with me. I want people to speak their opinions and share them and get, you know, people get to listen and decide for themselves. But I do want to go in this direction. And that is that you have been advising people now to get off sugar. Now, most people don't want to stop eating sugar. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so how have you done it? Now, let me rephrase the question a little bit, because most people listening to this show are somewhat health conscious. They're not necessarily the herd you described. These are people that are generally health conscious, want to improve themselves, are looking for tips, they want to get better. So I would say there's a difference between your patient who's dying and you saying, you're going to die within 5 years if you don't change your ways. So if I could frame it in the sense that these are a generally healthy population who are wanting to be healthier, how do you convince them to eliminate sugar?
Well, that's a good point. And you do have probably your audience is a healthier segment. So the tiger is not going to get them. If they're going to get in the middle of the pack, though. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but they're still eating sugar. They don't know it.
I'm eating sugar. Look, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here. I still like some sweets. Okay. I try to limit it. I generally eat well. I'm maintaining my ideal body weight. I'm generally fit. I'm not hopefully sounding here either arrogant or falsely humble either. I'm just trying to be open with you. I am a fitness buff. I love this. And yet on a Friday night, if there's treats at the game table or the party, I'll have some. I won't binge on them. I won't eat the whole bowl, but I'll have some. And I enjoy that. Are you telling me that I should stop doing that as well? That I'm still...
No.
Was that?
I said, you're going to die. No. You asked me about the difference between high fructose corn syrup and glucose. And that's really a distinction that really needs to be made.
Okay.
High fructose corn syrup, and this I'll get the letters, death threats, and I have, saying this, because the whole economy in the United States is based in Iowa. You're peddling this high fructose corn syrup. Let me just tell you what I found out. Number one, 80% of all the food in the United States has that poison in it. 80%. So even though you say you're not eating it, you are. 98% of all the meat in the United States is being fed corn. Cows don't eat corn, but that's the only thing for dinner. Pigs don't eat corn, but that's the only thing for dinner. Now remember, they're going to slaughter those animals for meat. And yep. they have to slaughter them quick because they're not going to live. They're so sick. We're eating that stuff. So the answer is, you can eat a lot of meat if it's grass-fed. You can eat a lot of food if it's grass-fed. Butter, milk, all those things that are grass-fed are one of their natural foods.
Right.
Corn, they ruminate. They're turning that grass into omega-3 fatty acids. When you feed them corn, it's omega-6 fatty acid. I mean, three carbons over with a double bond. How is that possible? It's insanity. But it's diametrically opposed. Sixes are inflammatory. Threes are anti-inflammatory. Going back into the Paleolithic diet with Boyd Eaton wrote, from Emory University. They dug down in different caves. Can't imagine doing this, but they did. 10,000 years ago, our omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is 1:1. The American diet is 20:1, 6/3.
Yeah.
And you throw in the trans fatty acids and you're going to be sick because the cell membrane can get the nutrients in, but it can't get the waste products out because of the trans, because it's tight. It's a physics thing. So if you're asking me treats here and there, no, I don't think that's a problem. I do the same thing. I mean, pizza is great, but you could make it healthy. But it is a convenient food. Do I eat all omega-3 foods? No, because I eat out a lot, but I try to steer myself into the right direction. So high fructose corn syrup. I remember having this debate 40 years ago with a friend of mine who now has Alzheimer's, by the way.
Wow.
He's a doctor, pediatrician. And I said, no, I thought there was a fundamental difference between those two sugars. And there is. Fructose goes through the liver. Glucose goes directly to the cells. But the fructose goes through the liver, causes fatty liver. It turns off a substance called leptin, which is your satiation hormone. Hmm. If you keep eating high fructose corn syrup, you'll never, ever be satisfied. You will be stuffed, but not satisfied.
Interesting.
Makes you satisfied, but you're never stuffed.
That's right.
See the difference?
Yeah.
Once you're in the keto world, you feel good about food. You feel satisfied with food. And you say, no, thank you. I don't need any more because I'm satisfied. But when I used to eat a big carb dinner, it's Thanksgiving, and Aunt Millie would come up after I stuffed and fell asleep watching the Dallas Cowboys. Remember that? And I was in a coma.
Yeah.
And right. Aunt Millie, everybody has Aunt Millie. Oh, you can eat a piece of that pie. What was it? Some pie. And then I said, I can't. Okay. And then she brings it with ice cream, and you can eat it. You could actually eat it, and you're in a coma.
That's
the difference.
Okay, so this has been really good. I love the science. I love the story. I love how you developed the entire theory. The book, Sugar Crush, it's on Amazon. Is it available at your website as well, or you just want people to go to Amazon? Or
I think Amazon is the easiest way to do it. Barnes & Noble has it, but I don't know if there's any Barnes & Noble stuff. But I did notice that we have an Amazon bookstore.
So, but before I let you go, 2, 3, 4, 5 tips. Just give people some ideas. What you understand what the average person out there, and I've kind of described the demographic of our audience. What are the top tips you'd give to people that they could implement that would help them to add these ideas into their life in a practical way?
Well, one of the things is, and this was for me as well, I like yogurt with the fruit in the bottom. There's more sugar in that than there is in a Reese's candy bar, which I also liked. Eat the Reese's candy bar, for God's sake. At least know what you're eating. And don't kid yourself, you're eating healthy with yogurt that has fruit in it. That's number one. And number two, I think, or maybe number one, is learn how to read the label. Total carbohydrates divided by 4 equals the number of teaspoons. That gives you a graphic. Would you, like the yogurt, that's about 16 carbohydrates in there. Would you put 4 teaspoons of sugar in some yogurt? Answer, you wouldn't do it if you knew that. But that's really what I would do. Steer yourself away from the sugar. But if you're going to eat the sugar, enjoy it. And don't kid yourself. That's what I would say. Because chocolate, now there's a great keto chocolate out, by the way. It's called Huan, H-U-A-N. And it's keto. And it tastes fabulous.
I've heard that. You're the second person now to tell me that. I've got to try it.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Jacoby, it's been fun. I've enjoyed our conversation. I think you have a lot of credibility here because you've seen literally inside people's bodies what is going on and the problem from the molecular level and from under the knife, so in real life, which is something that very few people can say. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there any last words of wisdom you'd like to share with everybody before we let you go?
Well, immunize yourself against COVID-19. It's a real virus. It's lethal. It's been weaponized. Take vitamin D. Take vitamin C. Don't eat sugar. Maybe a little zinc and maybe a little melatonin. And you'll be 99% protected.
Well, you couldn't have given a better endorsement for our Mimi's Miracle multi-product, which has vitamin D and zinc. Some people may not have heard of this. Could you just, seeing as you mentioned, could you mention what you know about vitamin D deficiency in COVID-19 patients who pass away?
Yes. I just read a paper. I don't remember the name of the paper, but it was a Korean study, 2017. They looked at elderly people, this 2017, before COVID. Okay. And the higher their asymmetric dimethyl arginine, which is an inflammatory marker, the higher that got, the lower the vitamin D got. What causes this to go high? Sugar. Take the sugar out, inflammation goes down, D goes up. Take vitamin D. Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact stat, but it's something like over 70% of the deaths in America who've died of COVID-19 are vitamin D deficient.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Well, on that note, again, the book is Sugar Crush. This is Dr. Jacoby. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Until next time, everyone, this is Dave Sherwin wishing you health and success.
Thanks again so much for listening. Don't forget about all the free resources at Dairobi.com. Also, find the show notes for this episode by clicking on the podcast link on Dairobi.com. And if you want to pick out any of our world-class products while you're there, throw them in the shopping cart and use code INSIDER to save 15% off anything you like. See you next time.